Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. For this program I have the usual weekly report, that is the update by Sheldon Nidal on behalf of the Spiritual Hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. Quite a number of different news items, a very interesting UFO contact going back to the 1960s, and a number of different messages of a spiritual basis. There was this week 4 separate messages issued by Matthew, now along with Sheldon Nidal and messages from Archangel Michael. I rate Matthew's messages through Susie Ward as certainly one of the best and most reliable. The problem being here is that where I would normally read them out as part of the program, the 4 messages total something like 25 separate pages, and this largely arises through Susie having been asked to print out part of some of the books which were printed some years ago. It basically concerns the time when she had a line with God, and through that contact over a period of time learnt exactly what God is and how he relates to the Creator. So what I think I'll do over the next week, I will see if I can read through and make some pertinent notes which might give a potted version of the messages, and maybe put that forward next week. So I'll proceed now with the weekly message from Sheldon Nidal, which reads, "We welcome you to another discussion of your world's happenings and they progress towards first contact. Our Earth allies continue gutting it out, and so each day brings us closer to victory. Our Earth allies speak of the undeclared covert war between the light and the last cabal reaches its denouement. Forces within major international financial and legal organizations have seized the day and are working feverishly to ensure that the promised deliveries go off as planned. Added to this is the rising discontent among a number of major trading nations concerning the cabal's American allies' handling of daily monetary transfers from one nation to another. Amid these grave challenges, our Earth allies' approaches to the last cabal fall, as ever, on deaf ears, and thus the day for carrying out our quiet revolution draws near. Now the dark is beginning to see the inevitability of its doom. The growing bottlenecks are raising doubts about the viability of the US regime, which further undermines its present position. This movement toward a new reality progresses at its own divine pace, accompanied by a vast upward shift consciousness. On a personal level, most of you are now very aware of this aspect of things, but the reality of the corresponding global changes still escapes many of you. And yet, those 2 aspects are inextricably related. Heaven set up a broad-based program of change that affects both the macro and the microcosms that constitute your present reality. It is indeed hard to bear witness every day to the amount of pain and suffering that the dark and its numerous minions can still meter out. Nevertheless, it is important for you to know, as you observe this mayhem, that just beneath the surface is an unprecedented series of huge changes on the point of breaking through. Once a critical mass in these affairs is reached, the aforementioned quiet revolution can wreak its damage upon the dark. This promised day is getting close, as the strength of the dark to hold things at bay is weakening rapidly. In fact, the time has come when the light has only to choose its appointed moment and then charge. The conditions on your planet make the current situation most interesting to our liaison personnel. On one hand, the moment for the Earth allies to spring their vice on the dark seems immediate. On the other, the way the divine is working this procedure appears to delay this moment unduly. Our position is to watch and wait. However, we sincerely want you to be aware that in our hearts we dearly wish to get going, in full throttle mode, with the charge of the light. But we recognize that a carefully formulated divine strategy lies behind all of this and those truly in charge have the final word. And so we commend your gracious patience in a big leap in consciousness, which transforms how you view your reality. This also entails a complete reorientation of your world view. For example, a fully prosperous world is a good start, but leaving the present structures in place means that it is only a matter of time before the dark regains its lost ground. This makes it clear that a new way of doing things is essential for permanent success. We are fully committed to implementing this dramatic change of direction on your planet. Despite the challenge of transforming the perceptions of an entire global populace, that is what the Earth Allies and their associated organizations have set out to accomplish. These brave souls are pledged to a massive global reform of government, financial structures and monetary policies, currencies, and adjusting the vital role played by the media in these affairs. It is essential that a safety net be thrown around your new abundance and your freedom. The media also must be able to report freely on what is truly happening. The corporation must be recast so that it looks first at its societal and environmental obligations and not just at the bottom line. As a sovereign individual, you have rights that carry with them a duty to become active in your community. Sovereignty on a mass basis can only truly work when the focus changes from self to your divine connection to others. This divine connection becomes a living reality as you move into awareness of who you really are. This great being is a sacred, immortal soul dedicated to helping others. In this act of community is born an ever-strengthening sense of self, which finds its joyous expression in working for the greater good. This relies on placing the essence of sovereignty at the center of all considerations. Each person is a divine charge of heaven, invested lovingly by the Creator with many unalienable rights. The unrestricted use of these rights generates the resources that allow you to do wonderful things. As an obvious example, helping your fellows to accomplish their life purposes. Building structures around this natural impulse results in what we call galactic society, which operates using a procedure called fluid group dynamics. This in turn is regulated by the four societal laws given to us millions of years ago by the Creator and Heaven. This rapidly approaching new world is a total about-face from the one you are now used to, and as such, a certain amount of retraining will be necessary. In this context, first contact can be seen increasingly as the divine instrument that completes the move into this new world that you have already begun. As we often mention, our role is to be your divinely guided instructors and your mentors in consciousness growth, and we have been preparing for this with relish. Happily, passion can often make quick work of a daunting task, but we also know that this passion of ours needs to be tempered by the divine. It is being given its proper place in the sacred equations mustered forth so efficaciously by heaven. We must always remember that what is being done is driven by the sacred, and that this carries with it only forgiveness and graciousness. The coming time will completely change how your world operates. Besides the new structural elements mentioned, a huge amount of data is to become available to you to help you move your new world down the divine path laid out by heaven and the Creator. You are to be both monitors and participants in this process. We cannot emphasize this enough. The key element in all of this, each one of you, as your awareness grows, vital new insights come to you, which you need to share among you. To this end, practical local and global forums need to be used, which can spawn watchdog groups to safeguard your freedom and sovereignty. You can see how this throws new light on our oft-quoted mantra, "Together we are indeed victorious." Only by honouring each other's rights and empowering each other's gifts can you hope to be triumphant. First contact comes at the end of your journey as a limited conscious being living in a desolate world of darkness. This event is a catalyst morphing you into fully conscious being living in a galactic world. As one called at the center of this transformation, your impression is that your world is plunging ever deeper into chaos and heading for some form of global extinction. In fact, your perception is based on the biased data so vividly reiterated by your media. Those who defend the so-called realities of your world often fail to make the link between what is happening and how it is presented to you. Our aim is to provide a more balanced view of your affairs by including what your media leaves out. Those who intend to change this reality need to have a comprehensive overview and focus on their positive visions in order to hasten the advent of what is now inevitable. Remember that what you put your energy on grows. And so the message concludes by saying, today we continued our discourse on current events and their relationship to first contact. The world we all wish for is divinely real and ready to roll. As you watch it unfold, you can help the process by maintaining your joyous anticipation and feeding your collective and individual heartfelt, detailed vision. So there we are, yet again, another very upbeat message, and we continue to get the impression that the events that are going to start first contact cannot be very far away. Now I come to the general news items. There was a couple in the UK paper, the Daily Mirror, which was calculating that the number of deaths in Iraq since the start of the conflict could be as high as 1 million, and not the previous biggest estimate of 655,000. And it was the Australian scientist, Dr. Gideon Belier, who published the new figures using independent data, including UN and UNICEF information. The Stop the War Coalition reacted. We can now see what a disaster the war has been. That's all I wanted to mention there. The point being that we know when you get these unpleasant things happening, which are backed by the government, the facts are always laid down. And I'm quite willing to bet if we could see the official estimate that is put forward by the US, it wouldn't be a fraction of this estimated figure as high as 1 million. Second article in the UK Daily Mirror was mentioning that peace campaigners will hold a People's Assembly in London this week to mark the fourth anniversary of the Iraq conflict. And Stop the War Coalition said it would involve artists, MPs, writers and activists from trade unions, peace groups, mosques and churches. And the US Democrat, Dennis Kucinich, is going to be one of the speakers, which will be wonderful. Protesters who took part in the 2003 anti-war demo will also gather in Parliament on Tuesday to oppose government policy. The comment was made that there has been no full public inquiry into the war nor a proper debate for the vote. The People's Assembly will try to redress that balance and discuss what Parliament won't debate. I thought I'd mention that one because it's good to see here in the UK, where we seem to have a lesser response to what is happening, that there are some groups that are doing something very positive. The next item I have comes from the BBC itself, from their site, which is bbc.co.uk. It's relating to a health matter, And it was mentioning that the use of hyperactivity drugs is soaring. And that, of course, is hyperactivity in children. And that was said as a result of a research carried out in the US. And it says that between 1993 and 2003, prescriptions of ADHD medications such as Ritalin almost tripled, and global spending on ADHD drugs increased ninefold, with 83% occurring in the US, according to a Health Affairs report. But experts said although use of ADHD medications had increased as awareness of the disorder improved, they may still be underused in the UK. Apparently, use of psychostimulant drugs to treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in 5 to 19-year-olds was examined in countries across the world. And between 1993 and 2003, use of ADHD medications increased by 274%. The US, Canada and Australia all had higher than expected use of drugs. And country-by-country analysis showed increases in other countries, including France, Sweden, Korea, and Japan. There you are, interesting comment on what is happening on the drug side, and I suppose we expect that because the drug companies are very powerful organisations, do all they can to push the use of drugs. In fact, in the UK, we find that the medical societies have over the last few months made quite a number of serious attacks on natural health remedies, and they seem to be in particular targeting the use of homeopathy. It's sad really that they want to take away our choices to use natural remedies when we prefer not to use drugs. I come next to an article on that good website, boothout.org. It came out today, actually. It was written by Anne Flaherty of the Associated Press. And it was the report came from Washington saying that a sharply divided House voted last Friday to order President Bush to bring combat troops home from Iraq next year. A victory for Democrats in an epic war power struggle and Congress's boldest challenge yet to the administration's policy. Ignoring a White House veto threat, lawmakers voted 218 to 212, mostly along party lines, for a war spending bill requiring that combat operations cease before September 2008 or earlier if the Iraqi government does not meet certain requirements. Democrats said it was time to head the mandate of their election sweep last November, which gave them control of Congress. Speaker Nancy Pelosi said, quote, the American people have lost faith in the president's conduct of this war. The American people see the reality of the war, the president does not. The report goes on to say that the vote echoing clashes between lawmakers and the White House over the Vietnam War 4 decades ago pushed the Democrat-led Congress a step closer to a constitutional collision with the wartime commander-in-chief. Bush has insisted that lawmakers allow more time for his strategy for sending nearly 30,000 additional troops to Iraq to work. The roll call also marked a triumph for Pelosi, who labored in recent days to bring together a Democratic caucus deeply divided over the war. Some of the party's more liberal members voted against the bill because they said it would not end the war immediately, while more conservative Democrats said they were reluctant to take away flexibility from generals in the field. Republicans were almost completely unified in their fight against the bill, which they said was tantamount to admitting failure in Iraq. Republican Whip Roy Blunt said the stakes in Iraq are too high and the sacrifices made by our military personnel and their families too great to be content with anything but success. There we are. We're seeing what effect, if any, the Democrats now have with their more powerful position in Congress. Report here now came from the UK paper Daily Mail, and you can find it on the dailymail.co.uk site if you wish. It was about a young lady called Leah Beth. She's known as the cancer girl. And the report said, we had to make a choice between quality and quantity of life, and if we had a few special months rather than a couple of miserable years, then that was what she wanted. And I made her promise she would not have to go back to hospital, said Leah Beth's mum. And having made that impossible choice, Catherine Beth discovered she was not able to honour her promise. She called the hospital and asked to speak to Leah Beth's paediatric oncologist. She said, I explained that Leah had suffered enough, and as her mother, I was determined to support her. I wanted to halt the last few treatments of radiotherapy. I don't know what I expected, perhaps attempts to try and make me change my mind or agreement to a postponement of the treatment. But instead, the consultant said, if that's your attitude, we'll get the Child Protection Services involved. Catherine Leah said, I burst into tears, shaking with anger and fear. I had nursed my child through 3 bouts of cancer. I sat by her bed night and day for 7 months doing the job of the nurses. The doctors used to check with me about her drug dosages, and they trusted us to be in charge of her isolation unit. Leah Beth was capable of making up her own mind about her treatment. She knows all about her illness. She used to correct the nurses if they got her drugs muddled up and knew all the medical jargon. But as a mother, I had no real rights over my daughter's treatment, and as a child, Leah Beth had no rights at all. Now, medical guidelines say this is not quite the case. Although traditionally children under 16 have not been considered competent to make their own medical decisions, their parents acting for them have the right to withdraw consent for treatment any time. But if doctors feel the treatment is in the child's best interest, no matter what the child or parent wants, they can simply, as in Leah Beth's case, as the consultant so abruptly said, involve Child Protection Services and instigate all proceedings. So there we are. I thought that you might like to compare what is happening in Great Britain, what happens in the States. The point, I think, of this report was that if the Child Protection Services were allowed to get involved, they would take the child away from her mother and force the young lady, who, if I recall, was 12 years old, to take the chemotherapy treatment. I think that's very wrong in that particular case. I think the mother knows so much about her own child, perhaps better than anyone else. And if the child is old enough to make that decision and fully understands the any likely repercussions, I really do fail to see what is wrong. Moving on to steps taken to end the climate crisis. Michael David, who has an email address and is at present setting up his own website, although it hasn't been completed, asks people to send in their support for petition to be taken before Congress, saying that immediate action needed to be taken to end the climate crisis. And he wanted to fill the committee room with 350,000 messages. Well, I'm recording this one because in the end, he ended up with 294,374 messages of support. And I think that's wonderful. It just shows the measure of support for these type of actions. And remember, not everyone knows Michael David, so that's quite, I think, an accomplishment. I now move to a very short report, talking about, where are we? Oh, this came from the Associated Press, a few days ago, talking about Bush and his warning to the Democrats to take offer in firings. What he's talking about from Washington is a defiant President Bush who warned the Democrats on, Tuesday, to accept his offer to have top aides speak about the firings of federal prosecutors only privately, not under oath, or risk a constitutional showdown from which he would not back down. There we are. So when you want to see things discussed and brought into the open, you have George Bush who wants them to be secretly carried out in private and not under oath, and I suppose we can all guess why. Isn't it sad that the top man totally ignores what you might call the basic rules of law and order, and to be seen to be just and fair in your dealings? Right, I come back to the website truthout.org again. Article by Jason Leopold, and this came out on Wednesday, and it refers to the Justice Department and an official who threatened to take, as he said, the gloves off and retaliate against the 8 United States attorneys who were abruptly removed from their posts if they continue to speak publicly about the circumstances behind their dismissals. That was according to an email released late on Monday, sent to the five prosecutors by one of their colleagues. Now, the email, a portion of which had been discussed during a Senate judiciary hearing 2 weeks ago, was written by H.E. Bud Cummings on February the 20th and sent to U.S. attorneys Dan Bogdan, John Mackay, Carol Land, David Iglesias, and Paul Charlton immediately after Cummings had a somewhat heated exchange with Mike Elston, the top aide to Deputy Attorney General Paul McNulty, about comments Cummings had made that were published in the Washington Post on February the 18th. Now, according to the Post story, Cummings had taken issue with statements made by Justice Department officials that the reasons behind his termination and those of his colleagues was the result of poor job performance. Cummings, the former U.S. Attorney, Little Rock, Arkansas, was replaced by an aide to White House Deputy Chief of Staff, Karl Rove. He said, quote, "They're entitled to make these changes for any reason or no reason, or even for an idiotic reason," so Cummings told the Post. "But if they are trying to suggest that people have inferior performance to hide, whatever their true agenda is, that's wrong. They should retract those statements." 2 days earlier, in an email to other five prosecutors, Cummings wrote that he had spoken with Elston, and Elston told him that if Justice Department officials feel like any of us intend to continue to offer quotes to the press or organize behind the scenes congressional pressure, then they would feel forced to somehow pull their gloves off and offer public criticisms to defend their actions more fully. So we have a little bit more about the sacked attorneys and the apparent cover-up trying to prevent people from knowing why they were removed. A report here by Dwayne Wickham. Trying to see where it's originated from. Unfortunately, it's reached me through an email, and it doesn't give us any more information, unfortunately. Still looking around, no, can't see any note at all. But it's a report that's coming out of Orlando Tuesday this week, saying that Harris Rosen is not the kind of guy whose name usually makes the pages of this newspaper. He's neither a presidential wannabe nor a political thug. Rosen is not a bigot or a high-profile fool, and as best I can tell, he is no heartless Robert Barron. What he is, however, is a very wealthy man who likes his charitable giving to be close up and personal. Rosen, who owns 7 Orlando area hotels, has put to good use Booker T. Washington's admonition to cast down your buckets where you are. And since 1993, Rosen has used his wealth to help revitalize Tangelo Park, the once drug-infested, trouble-plagued, unincorporated community near his International Drive hotel properties. This kind of program, if replicated, will change our society, says Rosen, talking of Tangelo Park program, which he funds. The twin cornerstones of Rosen's pledge to provide preschool education for all 2 to 3 and 4 year olds and college education for all high school graduates in Tangelo Park. And Rosen's largesse has helped turn around things in that community, which has 2,400 people and is nearly 90% black. I included that because most of the news items I seem to pick on, not particularly, shall we say, happy, but that's something positive, good to hear. might set a new trend, you never know. Now, from the New York Post, New York Port. There was an article on Monday saying that Mayor Bloomberg killed a study on the city's response to the 9/11 attacks after his lawyers said they did not want a report that cited any missteps or dealt with environmental or respirator issues. That was said by a former city official. City lawyers raised fears that the proposed after-action report, which the U.S. Department of Justice had offered to fund, could lead to criticism and fuel lawsuits. David Longshore, former director of special programs for the city's Office of Emergency Management, told the Post, "The Bloomberg administration acted to sweep any potential problems under the rug." That was said by Longshore, who was trapped in a loading dock outside the WTC while both towers collapsed. He later developed sinusitis and throat polyps and sued the city. Longshore, who left his city job last year, showed the Post his work notes on internal OEM discussions with city lawyers in February 2003. His notes say the law department doesn't want a critical report and does not want a report that says we did anything wrong. But there we are. Never a dull moment with 9/11. It never goes away. And we have yet another attempt to try and stop some of the truth coming out. Now, the last article I've got here, a little bit different. It's Confessions of John Perkins, who was an economic hitman. And this came from another good site, the news, rumormillnews.com. What he was talking about was that his confessions aroused a lot of public interest. And he said he spent a lot of time working up the courage to try and publish his report. He said, "By late 2003, the manuscript had been circulated to many publishers, and I had almost given up on ever seeing the book in print. Despite phrasing it as riveting, eloquently written, an important expose and a story that must be told, publisher after publisher, 25 in fact, rejected it. His literary agent said, along with John Perkins, that it was just too anti-corporatocracy. The word introduced to readers, meaning a powerful group of people who run the world's biggest corporations, the most powerful governments, and history's first truly global empire. The major publishing houses, he concluded, were too intimidated by them, or perhaps too beholden to corporate elite. Eventually, a courageous independent publisher, Derek Kohler, took the book on, and the success of it astounded John Perkins. During its first week in bookstores, it went to number 4 on Amazon.com. Then it spent many weeks on every major bestseller list in less than 14 months. It had been translated into and published in 20 languages, and a major Hollywood company purchased the option to film it. And Penguin/Plume bought the paper right backs. But there we are, another case of the truth trying to be suppressed. And when it comes out, it's something that people want to read and get hold of. There's a footnote to this saying that every major incident described in the book has been discussed in detail by the authors. The CIA's coup against Iran's Mossadegh, the atrocities committed by his replacement, Fidel's puppet, the Shah, the Saudi Arabian money laundering affair, Jackal orchestrated assassinations of Ecuador's president, Jaime Roldos, and Panama's president, Omar Torrijos, allegations of collusion between oil companies and missionary groups in the Amazon, the international activities of Bechtel, Halliburton, and other pillars of American capitalism, the unilateral and unprovoked U.S. invasion of Panama and capture of Manuel Noriega, the coup against the Venezuelan president Hugo Chavez. These and other events in the book are a matter of public record. There we are. That's all on the general news. I'll come straight away now to my UFO item, which comes out of one of my old Flying Saucer reviews, and this particular issue was a special one in September 1969. As I've often commented now, these older sightings and contacts were well reported and are very interesting because I think they got lost in the mist of time. You never see or rarely see any reference back to these unless they are of particularly noted importance. This one is about Gary Wilcox, who's in New Jersey, New York City, and a spaceship landed on his property on the 24th of April 1964. So, here we go. He was interviewed about the landing, and these are the questions answered. He was asked, when did you notice the object? He said, about 10 a.m. I was spreading manure in the lower field above my house and barn, and I noticed a white or shiny object above the field, just on inside edge of the woods. I was curious and drove my tractor up to the edge of the woods and stopped. I got closer and took a look at the object and thought it to be a fuselage or a fuel tank from the plane. Question, what did you do? Said, I thumped it, I kicked it. It felt like metallic canvas. Question was, then what? And he answered, two men appeared from under the object. These men were holding what seemed to be a metal tray, approximately 1 foot square, filled with alfalfa, with roots, soil, leaves and brush. The men were attired in what seemed to be white or some kind of metallic suits with no part of their body showing. Question was, were you frightened? He said, I sure was. I didn't say much for the first few minutes, but thought it was some kind of a trick being pulled on me. Questioner said, what were the first words spoken? He said, they answered, do not be alarmed. They asked what I was doing. The tractor, manure spreader, and manure was, I told them, because I was spreading manure. I talked and answered their questions for 2 hours and learned they had been watching me for quite a while. They were very interested in organic substances such as soil, as Mars is made up of rocky substances not fit for growing. I was told that in the future, Mars and Earth will be trading environments due to the rockets, missiles, and miscellaneous objects being ejected into space from Earth. I asked them if I could go back with them. Was I told I could not, due to the thinness of the atmosphere? They also said it was impossible for them to land in congested areas. The fumes of traffic were too dense. They also mentioned that astronauts Glenn and he said Grissom, question mark, he obviously couldn't remember the name, but I don't know what it is anyway, and the two astronauts from Russia would die within a year due to exposure of space. I'm not sure if that is correct. I'm not personally aware that the astronaut Glenn died shortly after he went up into space. Maybe worth checking out that one. Anyway, the story goes on, talking about the ETs, that they seem interested in learning the art of farming and growing. After learning that fertilizer would enrich this art, they wanted to know more about it. They did not seem to know what cows were either. I told them I could get a bag of fertilizer for them, but they did not wait. They said they usually did not appear after dark, as their metallic ship would be too obvious. It made a swishing noise only, and in daylight the ship is not easily observed. I watched them take off after being advised not to mention the incident. After a burrowing and swishing sound, they disappeared to the north. Only marks remaining that I could detect were some kind of red dust where the vehicle rested. I could not tell if it actually was resting on the ground or whether it was hovering in midair. It seemed to be a larger one than an auto, approximately 20 foot long and 14 foot wide and shaped like an egg. Voices seemed to come from what might be the chest of the men, and they had an eerie sound. Later that same afternoon, I returned to the spot where this took place and left a 75 pound bag of fertilizer near a small tree. On returning to the scene Saturday morning, I found the fertilizer was gone. That is the basis of the report. There's quite a long article in this magazine, but what I found on one of the pages is a drawing of Gary Wilcox's impression of what the occupants were and the UFO. Well, he's already said it was shaped like an egg, so there's not much to talk about that. But his drawings are not particularly good, shall we say, or detailed, but they appear to show in size and length of arms and legs something that appears to me to be more humanoid, which surprises me a little, because my impression is that the Martians are certainly no taller than maybe 3 to 4 foot maximum. Now that maybe there are two lots of Martians, I really don't know. Certainly in the latter part of the report, Gary Wilcox, I must confess, did talk of small men about 4 foot high coming out from underneath the tank. So maybe I'm right after all. I suppose I'm looking at the drawings and the measurements and thinking, because they look human, they are of a human type. So I've been corrected there by reading on a little bit more. I've had a very interesting reading to include in next week's program, because I haven't got time for it this week. And it's about the one-eyed entities that visited a place in Brazil. That's a very interesting story. Good drawings in the flying saucer region. It's a pity this isn't television and I could have shown it to you. Well, I've got more time than usual here to end up the programme, and it gives me an opportunity to read a little bit more out in the nature of general messages. Messages are mainly channeled, some intuitively received, some are recent, some go back to last year, but a few of these are. I've got one here that I thought was very interesting. It goes back to October last year. Can't actually tell you who channeled it, and that's unusual, because when I print these messages off, I usually manage to capture the name of the person who has done it. I do know that the message has been given by Ashtar, and it was the subject of Independence and Liberty. It's about a 3-page article. That won't take too long to read, and I think it's worthy of reading the whole amount. He started off by asking the question, so what do you think has happened here in this country you call the United States of America? So he's going to tell us. He said, your ancestors arrived and the light of freedom was burning bright in them, and they had a shiningness to them. Oh, some of them were still saying that they were the only true ones, and that people who were not of their faith were not, and so on and so on. And there were some dark doings, even in this land, that was to be so shining. But the concepts were written in your documents. And he quotes, your Declaration of Independence stands. Read it. It shines. Make a vow to uphold it, to make it a part of your being, because it is sacred, and because it speaks for the individual, not just the country. And understand that it is time now for you to put your name on that document, and by so signing your name, just as your forefathers did, you pledge your life, your fortune, and your sacred honour. Well, that is the same as saying you pledge the all that you are, and all of your creations, all that you create, and you do so in the light of love, standing free. And you unite with the one you truly are, the all you are, and you stand for the world to see, a light, a radiant being, free from all fear, and free from all of the conspiratorial controls that have slowly been placed upon you. You see, it hasn't happened all at once. It's been bit by bit, piece by piece, layer by layer. Is there a blame in this? Are we saying that you have not done a shining job? No. Do not take it that way, beloved ones. No, you came here. You're all star seeds. You came into these human bodies to live this experience. And this is not the only time that you've been in this country either. And some of you were here, in fact, all of you were here, before this country was even dreamt of by your forefathers and mothers. You have served here in this sacred land more than once. And why? So that you would know it in all of its aspects. Why now? So that you would have the joy of coming together in love and light. So you would have the joy of being in assistance, fulfilling your mission, as it were, bring forth the love light throughout the land. And who better symbolizes that than the one Lady Liberty, who, by the way, is a real entity. There is a spirit, and her name is Lady Liberty, and she shines within all of you. And so, when you do this ceremony of lighting her torch tonight, in your time, you will be doing this for your entire country. Your entire country will stand before you, and you before it, and you will reach out with the light you are, and you will connect, and this will raise the consciousness even more. Oh, that concept of the eight was most raising, was it not? Consciousness soared. You know we could see that. We have the ability to see what is happening with the consciousness, and it went way, way up. So when you light the flame, you'll keep it going up even more. How high can it go? Well, it's infinite. It matters not. Just keep it going in the upward direction. That is what is going to bring Lady Nassar onto your stage, that consciousness. You've heard it before in this place and others. Bring that 5D consciousness into your 3D. You don't have to quit your job to do it if you're not ready to. You don't have to leave your home and go trekking somewhere to some remote mountain top or cave or whatever. You don't have to do anything different as far as that which you might call your 3D lifestyle is concerned. All we're asking is you do try to be 5D being in 3D. Now, what could be simpler than that? Every time that you express love, every time that you connect with even one other being, be they in human body or otherwise, you are love. You are lighting the flame. You are being the love. That's what we mean by being a 5D individual. And when you come together in a gathering such as this, that is when you really fly, you know. You really soar. Because as you may know, there is empowerment in numbers. That which you can do by yourself is magnified more exponentially, more than the numbers you are participating with. And why not? We're all here with you. We're co-creating it with you. All of those whom you call your guides, your angels and beings, and what you call the lighted realms. The voice is very fond of that description, and all of those of nature are the Gaia's kingdoms. You're uniting with them all. Feel it. Feel the wonder of it, and feel the joy of it, and feel your welcome. And the love that is there for you is infinite, and it is real. It's the only thing that's real, truth be known. Now, at that stage in the message, it mentions that this was evidently a message that Ashtar gave on July the 5th, 2005, at the Olympia WA. So then now we know the occasion which he's referring to. However, the message goes on to say that, hold it still, we'll put the light on world politics, because if you think there's going to be some changes, just wait till you see what happens there. It will be most grand. It will be the culmination of the dream that started with your declaration. It will be that which was intended for this country all along. But again, you had to go as far as you did away from the ideals and principles in those documents of the founding of your country in order to understand and value and treasure the return of freedoms that have been taken from you. Do you want to send something out? Do you want to inspire? Send out that first paragraph from your Declaration of Independence. Take it with you if you go to a gathering of like-minded people. Print it, take it, pass it out. Ask people to give it their full attention, almost as though a meditation upon it. Bring it alive, bring it to your life with your love. Put that beautiful light upon it, that blue violet flame, and any other colours that bespeak of empowerment, that bespeak of empowerment for yourselves and for your beloved country. Keep that in your focus. Put it on your refrigerator doors, you know. Keep it in front of you. Read it every chance you get. Live with it. It's real high. It's way up there. And it is to be counted among the most priceless of treasures in their world. There was some talk about help from your brothers across the sea. Well, you know the legacy and the heritage that comes from that country called France. It goes way, way back. The Murians went there. Atlanteans went there. The Knight Templars had a holy purpose. In some cases, they've been given a bad rap, but they, or shall we say their ancestors before them, were privy to the ancient mysteries, and they knew that the teachings of the churches were blasphemous, and they knew. They paid lip service to it literally, but they knew. And those who survived and dedicated and are dedicated to those principles, and let us not leave this country of France without remembering their words, liberty, equality, fraternity. Those are their words, and they stand as does your declaration. Think about what they mean. Spend some time with that, if you will. You might feel some of that heritage within you. You've been many places, you know. Remember the one called Braveheart and the tradition of freedom that he represented? It was his, what you might call his DNA. Difficult as life was in that country, there is a strong independence there. Indeed, there is in the entire realm of what you call Great Britain, and that includes the Emerald Isle as well. There isn't anywhere in the world where, if you look at history of the countries and the tribes, where there isn't a strong history of freedom, where it may have been oppressed and suppressed for centuries. Every being, there was a spark. There was a spark, and even those who toiled in those gold mines so long ago, some of them had a vision of being free, and they were not as advanced as you. And so it is down through the ages. Freedom is a very strong cry. And that is it on that particular message. I thought that was quite a good one, though. Just as late, Ashtar seems to be very prominent in giving out his messages. And one I read from one source, not one that I've included this evening, was saying that change is now in us to the higher consciousness. Are very well advanced. That took a little longer than I imagined. I haven't too many minutes left, so I'm looking very quickly at something that I can quote from, that I can complete before I have to close. So I'm looking at one going back to also October 2005. They come under the general heading of the Tobias materials, and they come from a website called CrimsonCircle.com. Now, this was channeled by Jeffrey Hope, featuring Tobias. It was a question and answer session. I'd like to just read facets of it, see if I can finish it now. Here we go. He was being asked about the weather pattern, and they were talking then of whether the last three hurricanes had been man-made, and whether he could see the possibility of more man-made disasters. And he said, indeed, the weather patterns, particularly the storms, are as a result of the consciousness of humanity. These storms came in to help clear. These are the energies that have been produced by humanity over some long period of time. And he goes on to talk of hurricanes, for instance, that in the last year, at that particular time, had also started to affect the area of the Bahamas, of Cuba, and were now going up into the Gulf. He said these were the energies of Atlantis, clearing out old stuck energies, allowing a new type of Atlantis to come back up. So indeed, it is coming from the consciousness of humanity. It is the result of deliberate and calculated planning by sinister forces who want to take over the world. And he said it all depends. It depends on you. If you choose that to be, then you're going to live in that reality. He goes on to say, there are, how to say, conspiracies. There are those who are trying to get wealth, money and power. But generally, because of the beautiful balance of human consciousness and because of the love that's in it, including the love of Shumba, it is very difficult for any individual or group this day and age to take control of anyone. He says the consciousness now won't allow it. And he's also said you don't need to steal someone else's energy. You don't have to try and take away from another. It is actually easier to create on your own as a sovereign being rather than trying to take away somebody else's energy for power. Ultimately, you can have what you choose as a creator unto yourself rather than having to take it from others. You have everything you need within your being. There are those who literally have worked on trying to control weather patterns, and in their attempts have been minuscule compared to what human consciousness is doing to the weather pattern. And this includes the use of old fossil fuel energy. If there's anything you want to work with to help resolve, it's the energy crisis on Earth right now. There are less oil reserves than what humans are being told, but it is imperative to develop new energy sources. And finally, I conclude, the Earth is causing the weather problems because, whether they like to admit it or not, there is global warming. It is caused by a whole layer of pollutants around the Earth that are preventing the proper intake and output of energy, whether it is from the sun or other realms. This is causing disturbances in the very delicate balance of Gaia. I will close there and say thank you for being with me. Hope you enjoyed the items I selected. Hope you'll be with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you.